You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is Columbia Calling, episode 242. Yes, I'm back in Bogota, back in Colombia. For those of you who are regular listeners of the show will know that I've taken a few weeks off. It's summer, it's holiday season, and I decided not to record anything, and I didn't want to. I was taking a break from elections, second round of elections, the corruption referendum, just taking a break from it all and taking it easy. I went to London, we went to Montreal, and it was a great time. And you know what? I'm glad to be back, but we're back here in the chaos of Bogota again. And what can I say? I'm glad to be back because I'm here with a very special guest on the line from outside of Medellin, Rio Negro or Las Palmas. I think Las Palmas, actually. Her name is Emma Louise, and she's from Oxford, but she was... she was conquered by Colombia, and that's the name of her blog, Conquistada por Colombia, or Conquered by Colombia. So welcome on the line, Emma.
Oh, thank you very much, Richard.
It's a great pleasure to have you here. We've been in contact for a few months now. I was made aware of your blog, and then we followed one another on Twitter, and so on and so forth. What I want to say first is thank you for writing your blog. Thank you for putting together a blog that's cerebral. I mean, you know, you're well, it's supposed to. You've got a wealth of backgrounds. I know that you're a philosopher and a psychologist, and you studied in London, and that comes across because you make great literary references in your blogs. But let's start from the very beginning. You came over to Colombia against your wishes in 2011.
It was like that. What happened was I was trying to finish my doctorate, as I think you are currently, and I had a very, very good friend of mine who I'd met when I was an undergraduate in London, and she was Colombian. And all of the time we were friends, she was constantly saying to me, you must come to Colombia. And being very English at that time, I said, oh, it's not really a good time, maybe in the future. And then it came one Christmas that her father actually insisted upon inviting me. And I was still sort of saying, it's not a good time, I've got to write up my thesis. And he literally sent me an air ticket by email. So I couldn't refuse, and off I went. And that was in 2011, yes.
Can I just say, this is the most incredible thing. Someone sent you a ticket. I mean, that's it, paid for everything. It wasn't just a reservation that you had to then...
He literally rang me up and he said, you must come. And I'd never spoken to him before. He said, I am the father of your friend, and we'd really like you to come. And I said to him, well, I really have to finish my work at the moment. And he said, no, I'm not taking no for an answer. You have to experience Christmas in Colombia with a Colombian family. And as soon as I'd put the phone down, I had an air ticket in my email. And so I simply couldn't refuse. So I think about a week later, then I was off to Colombia.
And he didn't charge you for the ticket, I have to ask that.
So I still kind of owe him. In fact, that's why, as you know, I've tried to write a book about Colombia. And I actually dedicated the book to him as a kind of thank you, because I'm still very aware that he paid for this ticket. So it's kind of my belated thank you when I was writing the trip.
I'm glad. It's not like a thank you to, you know, Juan Diego, and these are his bank details. Hacer una consignación.
Exactly. It's a kind of, an unusual thank you. But I am very grateful to him, because I kind of feel like this man, who I've never met, really literally changed my life. I'm not sure whether he knew that the end product of sending me this ticket would be that I would end up living in Colombia, although I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if he had seen that something like that might have happened in the end.
It's amazing. I mean, Colombians, I think, are quite sort of, they've got an esoteric view included with their Catholicism. And you know, a lot about the Pachamama and a lot about the vibes and the aura and so on. Even the most conservative families, you know, I reckon he must have had some sort of signal.
Yeah, it's really, really odd. And he is exactly as you just describe Colombians, I think, which is that this sort of, on the surface, things can seem very Catholic.
Mm.
There is this sort of, I don't know, as you say, sort of leaks out of the land, this sort of thing that has tried to been erased over time through the conquest and other things, but it just doesn't go away. And yeah, he is a very esoteric man.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I really like that. You know, maybe we've tried to erase it, or, you know, contemporary civilization may have tried to erase it, but it's still here, as you say, seeping through the land. And you're up there in Las Palmas, of course. It is, I would say, a spiritual place. You're in the mountains outside of Medellin, which must have had great Aboriginal or original settlements in there. And do you feel this up there? Do you feel connected to this region?
Oh, very, very much. I live actually in what is native forest. I'm very lucky in that respect. I live in a native forest about half an hour from Medellin, and my garden is full of birds and plants that have been here for hundreds of years. The only sad thing is that I'm constantly seeing bulldozers all around, turning the land into sort of mini golf courses for people. But I take it very seriously, that the responsibility to look after the natural forest here. I think it's a very beautiful thing, and particularly, I mean, I live in Antioquia, as you know. I particularly feel very at home in Antioquia. I'm very connected to this part of Colombia, which is quite a strange thing, because I don't have any, well, at least in this lifetime, I don't have any kind of particular links to this place, really. I mean, I sort of ended up here by accident, and yet I feel very, very strong connection to this place. I'm going on a trip in a few weeks to the Middle East, and I'm already feeling depressed about it, to be honest. I mean, I should be feeling excited about going to, you know, somewhere really nice, but it pains me to leave this part of the country.
But you're coming back.
I'll come back. Oh yes, it's only a 10-day trip.
Okay.
But that's how strongly I feel about it. I think I've never felt such a sense of home as I feel in this part of Colombia.
You sound incredibly grounded there. You sound incredibly happy. And this is something that we could definitely draw on from your first blog, your sort of introduction on Conquered by Colombia, where you talk about being perhaps born in the wrong country, or people having that experience. I mean, it's really that strong, your feeling of connection to Colombia.
I think that sounds awfully dramatic. wasn't meant to be quite that dramatic. But I suppose so. I think I'm very English, and people, Colombians say, oh, you're very English in many ways, sort of mannerisms and things like that. But undoubtedly, I feel something very special here. I mean, the blog, I have to say, the blog is not and was never intended to be a sort of big project, a sort of, you know, when people set up blogs and they think, oh, I'm going to finance my trip, or finance my life, or, you know, I'm going to show people how to get their visa done or anything. I mean, it really was, didn't have any of those kind of noble ambitions, really. The whole point of the blog was really just a way to express something, in the hope that maybe one person might enjoy it, or two people might enjoy it, and that's all, really. I mean, if you enjoyed anything there, that's very nice. Yeah.
Well, we'll draw on it more, but the comments that you have on there are incredibly favourable and incredibly positive, all from Colombians as well, just saying how much you belong there. I mean, this is the thing. You're not just writing about the difficulties of a visa.
No. I think those kind of blogs are very useful, but I think there are lots of them, and I don't think I would be the right person to advise on anything bureaucratic whatsoever. I find it kind of odd, actually. For example, sometimes when I do meet foreigners in Colombia, They say sentences that I have to say, give me the creeps. Like, for example, they say things like, yeah, you know, it's a good place to be to invest, or, you know, that things are happening here, or that, yeah, I can kind of see where they're coming from, but I can't relate to their experience because I'm not here to make money, to, you know, build property or that. I mean, but, you know, if I built a house, that would be lovely. But that's not why I'm here. I think I'm just here literally to be here. I just like how I feel here. And I like how other people are here. And I like the colours and the smells and the sounds. And any time I have to move away from that, I really feel the pain of it. So that's why I'm here. So I find it very interesting when I read things other foreigners say. I don't know. How do you react?
How do I react to these things? Well, I've been in Latin America for it's around 18 years now, and I've been in Colombia. Next year will be my 12th year full time in Colombia. I think like many people, I go through peaks and troughs. There are good times and there are bad times, but that's life. I feel incredibly privileged to be here. Incredibly privileged, in fact. I've worked honestly and diligently. In fact, I worked harder probably than I've ever worked in my life. And Colombia has provided me with everything. My wife, who's Colombian, is continually wanting us to go to the UK and potentially move to the UK. And I just don't see it. We go and I enjoy visiting, but visiting only, you know. I don't think people say, oh, it's a great time to invest, or you invested at the right time, of course, because I put the hotel together. But I don't know if I knew it was the right time. I had some money at that moment. I saw what I thought would be a fascinating project, and yes, it has been a fascinating project. I think I'm most happy in the most sort of let's say mundane of situations, going to have a coffee, even alone, you know, or chatting with something, you know, banalities with a stranger. I think which I don't do, or experiences that I may not have had in the UK. I think that's a big difference, and that's what makes me like happy. That's what gives me sort of refreshes me. I think
that's, I can relate to that. I feel something very special about Colombia. I wouldn't say I have changed as a person in Colombia, but I would say that Colombia has made me more me. Mm. I feel like there are lots of aspects of me that I feel I can express far more easily here than I could express in England. And I don't really know why that is. I mean, I don't want to say anything particularly horrible about England, but I just feel that there's something about Colombia which... Yeah, I don't know. I suppose a good metaphor would be a plant, isn't it? You know, if a plant's not in the right habitat, it just kind of withers and dies. Whereas if it's in the right soil, it produces flowers and fruits and, you know, grows and flourishes or something like that. It's kind of like that, I think.
Maybe that's a good one. I mean, because again, as I say, everybody knows, and I say it week in, week out, peaks and troughs, but... It's so, you know, again, the banalities, I love the excitement of being here. I mean, because there is an excitement. And an undercurrent of life. And I go to England and I do love going to London. And this is, but it's difficult, you know, I am a Londoner. I was born and raised there. When I go beyond the city limits, my attitude to everything changes. Yeah. So it's hard, I guess. I don't know. It's just an interesting thing. I don't know whether I'd ever say I was born in the wrong country. I may, you know, if we're talking esoterically and whatever, maybe there's a past life somewhere else. but I don't know. It's a tough one, isn't it, when we talk about this? But I just think having come here, having worked in pretty much all Latin American countries or traveled in them, for some reason or another, I chose here.
I think that's a very beautiful thing. I think it's like when people adopt a child. Mm. You're choosing that child. I think it's the same thing as an immigrant or immigrant.
Mm.
is you're making a conscious choice to choose that country to spend your life in, and that is different to just being born somewhere and sort of making your life there. And I think and that's nice as well. But it's something about choosing a place. There is something special about that.
Yeah, and I'll quickly say, you know, I chose here having not met my wife. And I chose it because I wanted, because something felt right. Something was bubbling beneath the surface. I don't know. I mean,
Columbia was calling.
Oh dear, you had to do it. Well, you were conquered by Columbia, and Columbia was calling me. So there we go. We're going to take a short break. When we'll be back with Emma Louise, who's from Oxford, studied in London. She's a philosopher and psychologist. Please check out her blog. That's www.conqueredbycolumbia.com. It says it all. A very interesting chat we're having right now, and we're back on the airwaves, episode 242. Yes, I did take a small break, and all of us deserve a little bit of a holiday, but we'll come back in the second segment of this show and talk further about our findings as expats here in Colombia, and maybe just a little bit more chat about how it is to be here and why and so on. But anyway, thank you again for listening. We'll take a short break and we'll be back shortly with Emma of Conquered by Colombia. Bye-bye. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. This is episode 242. And those of you who have been listening thus far know that we're talking to Emma, who's in Las Palmas, up in the mountains outside of Medellin. Her blog, Conquered by Colombia, offers, you know, I would say a more erudite and more educated concept of Colombia. She's up there. She's working right now for the Colegiatura in Medellin. She's a researcher there researching states of consciousness, I believe. Look, how do you end up studying states of consciousness, Emma?
Oh, I don't know. No, well, the answer is I usually specialise in something called depersonalisation, which is a psychiatric condition. But here, because I've been doing less clinical work, I've been doing more research on different states of consciousness. So that's really the answer to it. But at the Colegiatura, which is it's a very interesting university in Medellin, we're doing research particularly on how states of consciousness relate to creativity. So most of our research is looking at creativity, what creativity is, and whether or not you can become more creative or not, which I think is something that we all hope we can become.
Well, I hope so too, yeah.
So that's kind of what I do as my day job.
And do you, is it all about interviewing people, or are you just, you're just...
We interview students, we do all kinds of research, we do statistics, we publish papers as well in journals about our research. And I have to say, I take that quite seriously, because I think education is a very important thing. I think in Colombia, increasing research output is a very important thing for the future of our universities here. And so I feel very privileged to take part in that with my fellow Colombian researchers here, and hopefully make Colombian universities participate more globally.
Definitely. So tell us a bit more about this. How did you end up getting this job? Because, I mean, it's a very interesting field to be in, but, you know, it's not easy to get a job out here in Colombia.
That is a story. In fact, when I came here, I had a job set up, and I was going to be working as a clinical psychologist here in Colombia. And when I arrived, my prospective boss was, how can I put this, he was still whale watching in New Quay. I think it's quite common here, at least in Antioquia. I don't know if people do the same thing coming from Bogota and other parts of the country. They like to spend the new year whale watching in New Quay. In fact, I think it's something people do whenever they're stressed out here. They just kind of go away and go whale watching. So when I arrived, I thought I was going to be starting working at this clinic. And the weeks ticked by, and the secretary kept saying, it'll be next week, it'll be next week, it'll be next week. And then I was offered a job by this university in Medellin, where I had attended one of their conferences, actually, a couple of years before. And they contacted me because they said, oh, we heard that you were in... heard that you were in Colombia. We didn't actually know that you were here. Would you be interested in doing some research with us, because we're just starting doing research? So I did. So that's what happened. So the first job didn't work out, and I ended up accepting this other job, which turned out to be much better.
Well,
for my circumstances, but I think that's very Colombian. I sort of learned from that experience that whenever you make a plan, the one thing you can guarantee is that is not how things will happen. You know, if you say you're going to be having lunch at 12 o'clock, the one thing you can guarantee is it won't be 12 o'clock. It might be 11:59 or 12:01, but it won't be 12 o'clock. And that's how it was with the job. So, so it's a bit strange how I ended up working there. But I've been there now, since I was here, so 5 years, 6 years.
It's amazing. I mean, you were probably biting your nails, pulling your hair out, worried about this first job, and this other one almost fell into your lap.
No, it was very strange. It was very strange. But that's the kind of thing that I like about Colombia, because I think I normally would have the tendency, to get very anxious about things like that if things don't happen according to a sort of script. Mm-hmm. But I think Colombia has taught me. I experience Colombia a bit like a teacher. That sounds a bit esoteric as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But a bit like a teacher. So it's a bit like Colombia's saying, you know, don't get too attached to a certain outcome. You know, things will work out in a different way, and sort of trust that life will work out.
Yeah, and actually, it's very interesting you say that life will work out. You know, this year has been a more difficult year, especially in tourism because of elections and so on. You know, that's the business I run and whatever. And yet it's my wife, again, the economist, a little bit more concerned. And I'm saying, oh, we'll find a way through it, which is not the way I would respond in England.
Yeah, how would you respond?
I would be, you know, looking at selling my car and calling up family members to find a way through it. But here I'm like, something will come up. So very interesting.
Exactly. It's kind of, you've become more Colombian. Your wife's become more English, isn't it?
I think so. I think there's something to be said about this. Now, it's interesting. This feathers us in quite nicely to something on your blog as well. It's in the first one, your introduction to yourself. Yeah, you've got to be careful, because I read every word on there. And now others will, so be careful. You talk about not wanting to come here, which we addressed in the first segment, but you also sort of make a reference to the author Edward Said, and you talk about the stereotypes, and of course we're talking about Colombia and its stereotypes, but the stereotypes driven by imperialists to make them inferior. And I mean, you're writing about Colombia, and obviously, but you know, Said was talking more about the Middle East, I think, and. Tell us a little bit about this. I mean, because you feel, I mean, clearly quite strongly on this point.
I do. I feel very strongly. I mean, I'll try not to get on my soapbox too much. Edward Said, he was talking about the Middle East and what he termed Orientalism, which is what he thought, that people from outside the East, in inverted commas, tended to see the East in a certain way. And the way that they saw the East was a very poor reflection of how it really was, and was also driven a lot by political interests from outside the East. Mm. So I found his ideas very interesting when you start to look at how Colombia is portrayed abroad. I mean, we only have to look recently, don't we, at the World Cup, and I'm sure you saw the way, I think it was the Sun newspaper, wasn't it? That sort of says cocaine or something. I can't remember what the headline was.
Oh, yeah, go cane.
Exactly, yeah. Thank you. These kind of sort of cheap thing. I mean, I guess my view is, I think that, although my view is changing on this, I can talk about that in a minute, I think that the British have historically had very little to do with Colombia compared to other parts of the Caribbean. And for the British, they're constantly sort of using images about the Caribbean that I find very dull and very boring. I mean, if you ever watch BBC documentaries about the Caribbean, you know, there's always a guy, you know, sort of with a machete, and they always start the first 5 minutes with, "I'm going to the most dangerous part of the world," and you know, full of drugs and trafficking and prostitutes, and I mean, as you know, as if there aren't drugs and prostitutes in Elephant and Castle. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not trying to deny that there aren't these social problems in parts of Latin America and the Caribbean, but if you have a deep relationship like you do with Latin America or with Colombia, you of course acquire a much more complex view. And just as there is prostitution, there is the opposite of that. And, you know, just as you can buy drugs, you know, you can buy caviar. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. And I think that there is a political reason for it. I think particularly in England, a country that used to be a big imperial power, they're still coming to terms with the fact that they're not. Mm. And a lot of English people like to think they still are. Yes. And I think that that has expressed itself in Brexit, but that's another issue, isn't it? you know, this kind of we rule the waves, you know, mentality kind of thing. And I think it's in the British interest to portray former colonial countries as downtrodden, as dangerous, as, you know, in order to make out like England is great, that there are no problems, that everybody's got it better in England. And my last memory of going to England, which now is probably nearly 3 years ago, were railway ticket machines full of rust and decay and train seats falling apart and lots of homelessness and things like that. And so, I don't know, I suppose you see my point. I think that in Britain, at least, there is they portray countries in certain ways. And just as Saeed talks about Orientalism, I think we could talk about Caribbeanism. I think there is a way of portraying Caribbean countries gives a very, very narrow impression of what those societies are actually like.
Fascinating. It might have been a Freudian slip or something in there that you managed to choose Elephant and Castle, of course, where the largest community of Colombians reside in London.
You're right. Unconscious.
Yeah, that's okay. But very interesting. I do think, as a Briton, I do think we are in search, in a desperate search for an identity in this post, let's say, imperial situation that we find ourselves in. And, you know, because you're not, being from London is not the same as being from Oxford, as the same from being from Sheffield or from Grimsby or from, you know, Barrow-upon-Furness. I don't know why I picked that place, but it's there. And that is the Brexit, as you say, the Brexit equation, isn't it? We don't really know. There's no real unifying cry for England, and that's hence Brexit, hence that sort of post-imperial reaction. I think it's something you're touching on, which is very close to my heart, because this is hopefully what will come out a lot in my doctoral research, is that, again, the struggle here in Colombia for an identity, a great unifying identity. And I think that's partially what's coming here in Colombia. People are, you know, we always see, oh, it's the first or the second happiest nation in the world, or, you know, or people sometimes denigrate their own country by talking about, yeah, we've got it bad, we've got the most complicated conflict, and I saw a tweet recently, again, it's like, oh, Colombia, the only country in the world which votes against peace and against corruption, for corruption. Right. That's not correct. It's easy to put it down, but like you mentioned, again, the Saeed reference, there's also this deep ignorance.
Right.
So I just don't know. I don't know. It's something again. I thank you very much for saying that. I have, a deeper, more complex imagination or research or on this region. It does become more complex.
Of course, you do, because you have direct experience, and that's Saeed's point. The point is that a lot of the images that people had about the Middle East were fantasies, basically. You know, fantasies of, you know, people belly dancing and smoking shisha all day and this kind of thing. And I think most people in England might have an image of Colombia, again, without any direct experience. Mm. And direct experience changes everything.
I'm so happy you're talking about direct experience. I mean, off air, we talked about the fact that next week I've got my oral exam for my doctorate, and I have to discuss this American anthropologist, philosopher type guy called Clifford Geertz, and he talks about experience and direct experience. It's in my head at this very moment, because I'm going to have to quote him. I'm very nervous. If everyone's out there, think of me next Wednesday. Think of me on Wednesday the 12th, please, all of you. Let's get back to... Thank you. Let's get back to something here. And Edward Said aside, let's go on. You wrote a very nice piece on an ode. Now, hang on a second. Your blog is both in English and in Spanish. Do you actually write it independently in Spanish too?
I write the English, and then I translate it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
Wow. Okay. So you talk about a vested interest in ensuring it's a bilingual blog. I wouldn't even do that. But you wrote a very nice piece on an ode to the Colombian mochila. And of course, those of you out there listening will know about the Wayuu mochilas and the Arawak mochilas, which are very fashionable and sold in Selfridges for a huge amount of money in downtown London. But tell us about why this came about.
Why did I start liking mochilas?
Why did you decide to write about them?
Oh, God. Oh, I have no idea. I like mochilas very much because one of the things I like about mochilas, I like the way a mochila feels when you're wearing it. I mean, if there's anybody listening to this that doesn't know what a mochila is, I expect all of your listeners do, but maybe they don't. It's a kind of woven... How would you describe it, Richard?
Yeah, a woven bag, almost a woven bag, the Wayuu ones, despite the fact that the correct ones, the authentic ones, tell stories, you know, where to find water, and they're sort of the entrails of a goat can be depicted on them, and so on. But, those are the more colorful ones, and then you've got different ones. But, of course, not mochila in the typical translation from Spanish to English, which is a backpack.
Exactly. I mean, it's not a rucksack at all. It's a very simple. I can't remember what I said in the article. I think I called it a bucket bag because it's. I think in English you'd probably call it a bucket bag. It's a very simple kind of sack with a handle. And I think what I like about the mochila is its elegance, its simplicity. I like the way it feels on your body when you're wearing it. Mm. I like the fact that somebody has made it with their hands. I like the fact that it's usually made with natural dyes, or at least that they, you know, the traditional ones are. Yeah. And I like feeling that it's come. This is an odd point, but there are lots of places in Colombia that I would like to go to that, for whatever reason, I feel I can't go to at the moment, either because of the political situation or for other reasons. And for me, I think by buying crafts from people that make them in these parts of the country, for me it's a way of connecting to parts of the country that as yet I can't reach, which may sound like an odd thing to say, but I feel that quite strongly. So I like to buy mochilas from places that I haven't visited, and I take them as a kind of sort of promise that I'll go there at some point.
I like that, and I understand it absolutely. In fact, I don't go very often now to Expo Artesanías because, just for various reasons, I can't watch my wife spend all the money in there. But when we do go, I end up going to the sort of, let's say, the indigenous pavilion, let's say, I think that's what they call it. And And I just end up either buying little trinkets from each of these men and talking to the guys from Putumayo, Caquetá, Guainia,
yeah.
Because that's far more interesting to me. Far more.
It's the best museum in, well, one of the best museums in Colombia. Is the Expo Artesano. It's incredible because, as you say, on the surface of it, you have the items which you can purchase. But in reality, it's a way of meeting Colombia and all of its people. And there's a sadder side to it as well, which is, I mean, so I love talking to, like you, I love meeting people from the indigenous communities and learning about their work and the struggles that are going on in their communities. But I always feel a bit depressed afterwards, thinking that this is basically what these people are reduced to, selling their crafts to me. And I don't know how I feel about that. I haven't got an easy answer to that conflict, but I'm aware of it when I leave the exhibition. But what I love about mochilas is also what you said, is first of all that often they tell a story. I love symbols. I find symbols very deep. I love thinking that I have a bag that no one else has.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very strange that somebody would spend thousands of pounds or dollars or pesos or whatever on a, you know, a very expensive designer handbag that's been made in a factory somewhere. I just can't comprehend it, really, when there are such beautiful mochilas.
Yeah, no, I understand. No, I understand fully. And each one of these, again, completely original and telling a story. I think that it makes so much of a difference, you know, to be able to say to that, I bought you this and I met this person, you know, who must have traveled a day by river and then to get to a road, to then get on a bus, to get to a city, to then get on another. You know, we're looking at a proper tale.
It's beautiful, as you say, it's the journey of where that mochila has come from to come to you. That's a very, very beautiful thing.
Yeah. So we're closing off this episode now. We're coming to the end of our, you know, last 5 minutes. It's been really nice, and actually it's nice to talk to you because it's going something a little bit more, a bit deeper into why you are here, why we are here, what's our love for Colombia and so on. And I promised you I wouldn't ask it, but now I'm going to ask it. you're a single lady out in Las Palmas. I'm sure every Colombian asks you, have you got a boyfriend yet? Are you married to a Colombian yet?
Well, I think you can't, for example, if I go to the supermarket, the first thing that happens is an elderly woman will ask me, you know, do you have children? Why don't you have children? Then they start recommending fertility clinics. That's very Colombian. I think actually, it's interesting what you're saying, because I think for me that is the only thing I struggle with in Colombia, is sometimes lack of privacy.
Yeah.
I think that it's a collectivist society, and that's, there are lots of wonderful aspects to that, because you're part of something and people want you to be part of it and people include you. And even though I'm foreign, and I'm sure all of my friends, you know, describe me as a foreigner, they also treat me as a Colombian. You know, you're accepted, you're not. But yeah, what I don't like is the fact that, yes, your entire life is something that belongs to the collective. That's probably the only thing I find challenging.
Yeah, so don't answer. We don't need it. But I like it. That's all right. What I wanted to say there too, you just reminded me of something. Many, many years ago, 2006, and when I was very, very sick once in Brazil, I almost died. Then I was up in Colombia and I had a relapse of both malaria and hemorrhagic dengue. And I went to the hospital. I got an ambulance from my hostel in downtown Medellin to a hospital up on the mountain. And the ambulance, the gurney carrier, whatever. The only thing he would ask me about is that, did I like the Paisa girls?
Did you?
Well, I said, yes, of course. But, you know, and I'm in a state of sort of varying state of consciousness. I was delirious on this gurney in the back of a tiny ambulance, and he's asking me about my conquests.
I can say this. I think I can't say that I know Colombian men very well because I live in Antioquia, and I think that there is a very particular way of being in Antioquia. But I'm happy to talk about Antioquian men. I think Antioquian men are very intense. I think they're very emotionally deep people. I think that they're very connected with this region. And I think they get a bad press. I think people call them machistas and this kind of thing. But I think there's a difference between being protective and caring towards women and being a machista, in my view. And I don't have anything bad to say.
There you go. Look at that. That's a nice positive note for our Colombian male counterparts there. Because I don't know if you listened to an episode many, many moons ago with a friend of mine, Lorna, about dating in Colombia. Just look up Lorna in the Dating in Colombia episode, and she talks about her various issues. And I'm not going to lie, she's dated a few. But let's end on that before I get carried away and say, listen, Emma, thank you so much for your time and for your observations and sharing with us.
Thank you very much, Richard, and thank you for your lovely podcast. Is this where you start playing the Total Lemon Pocina?
Yes, this is where El Pescador will come in, and so you'll start hearing that. But so please check out Emma's blog. It's conqueredbycolombia.com. She's on Twitter and so on, so you can contact her if you need to these ways and comment on her excellent insights and observations on Colombia. And so keep enjoying life out there and keep in touch. And if you, let us know if anything special is coming up that we should talk about. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you again, Emma. This has been Colombia Calling, episode 242. I've been Richard McCall talking to Emma in Las Palmas, Antioquia. I hope you enjoyed the show and that we're back on the airwaves. I've got some interesting people lined up for future weeks. And so please be sure to tune in and spread the word. Bye-bye.
Chorro y ata.